Everybody, to this latest edition of the Forever Bristol City podcast. A joyous evening. Joining me in the live studio are Mark, Ian, and making an appearance on a Saturday for the first time in a while, Dave Fevs. Guys, happy
No music,
day.
Dave.
Eh? Yeah.
No music.
Not that music. That's for later. That's for the recorded version. All right. Okay. All right. But Dave and everybody, happy days. Let me start with you first, Dave. I mean, that was our usual sort of quick resume of the game. That was our complete performance, really, wasn't it? Yeah?
Yeah, it's very good. On a difficult pitch against a team that, although they're struggling, they're the kind of team that we struggle against. I thought we did exactly what we want or what we needed to do today, and we ran out very comfortable winners.
Yeah. Ian, your thoughts initially on the game?
We competed physically, which you've got to do against those clubs. Our best performance of the season, bar none. And what I liked best was we played football in their half, didn't let their pivot get the ball in turn like we normally did, didn't let their centre-backs sit in a deck chair when they had the ball. And we made them look a really... They aren't a great side, but we made them look a poor team.
Yeah, and Mark, your thoughts?
No collective passiveness from Casey and the Sunshine Band this week. Fantastic performance, best of the season. City pressed high, they were high energy and scored three terrific goals, even counting Semenyo's second one off his backside for the second time in three games. No, I can't wait till the rest of the season if we play like that. Thanks.
Well, Andrew. That's... Go on, Ian.
That's coaching for you. That 1-2 off the opposition goalkeeper, that's not a simple thing to do, you know.
Well, look, let's look at the lineup. I'll come to you again first, Dave. Head injury protocols meant no Nash and no Zach Viner. And I think you said on a tweet before the game, it looked like Backington had been put on the naughty step for his somewhat lackluster start last week. But was that a 4-2-3-1 lineup as you saw it?
I've got to say, it actually took me about 10 or 12 minutes to actually work out exactly what we were playing, because I think Palmer was quite a lot all over the place, or not all over the place in a bad way, but he was not sticking to just kind of sitting in behind Zizou. So it took me a little while to work out, yeah, okay, this is a 4-2-3-1, Masengo and Lansbury sitting. And I think there's been a number of people that have said they thought we might go to this under Pearson, and we did, and it looked pretty good.
Yeah, Ian, your thoughts on the lineup? Do you think if there hadn't been those head injuries, it would have looked the same or slightly different? Ian. You still there? Dave, can you hear me?
I can hear you as well.
Yeah,
somebody's
go on, Mark.
Ian. Yeah, I think it was, Viner and Nadge were missing, but 4-2-3-1, we looked so comfortable. And he played that at Watford with much better players. But I was so taken aback by how well Lansbury, I've given Lansbury a lot of earache, not that he was probably listening, but his passing today was superb. And Masengo was so busy on the ball, winning the ball on the edge of his area, and making tackles in his own half and playing higher up the pitch. That was his best game he's played for City. He was terrific. And
Best game ever, would you say, Mark? You know, because it goes back a while, doesn't it?
But the spine of the team were great, and that enabled Casey Palmer to make great through passes and put Semenyo and get Semenyo and Wells on the ball in the channels behind the defence. And they really gave Pedersen and Colin a real torrid time today. Wells, his touch let him down in good areas because he had the ball in great areas on the left, and his touch let him down a bit. But Semenya was fantastic, and Palmer really should have had two goals. He'll probably kick himself for missing the second one because it was an easier goal than the first. But two great halves of football, and that's what we've been looking for City. Yep. They, as a team, as a unit, we look great. We'll play better teams in the final nine games, but if we play like that, we'll win more than we lose.
Yeah,
no question
Dave,
about that. That's
Dave,
what we want to say.
Yeah, Dave, I don't know if Ian's back in. He's got a few sound problems at the moment. You still there, Ian, or you still got sound problems? You back in?
Well, all I could hear was you doing the Darlick thing.
There we go. Well, let me ask you the question, Ian, about the lineup. Never mind ramifications. Let's ask you about the lineup. Had it not been for those protocols and Viner and Nash being available, do you think they would have made the starting 11? Do you think there'd been any material changes to it, or not necessarily?
I think Viner would have probably played instead of Masengo. And possibly, I don't know, but I think Nash might have been on the bench. And there's a question to answer for the Blackburn game, isn't there, as to whether do you play Lansbury again? So a second game in 4 days, will he be fit enough to do that? Or does Viner have to come back, assuming they both test okay and they've, the concussion protocols are observed? So let's assume for the minute they're fit. Do you bring Viner back in for Lansbury? I definitely wouldn't leave Masengo out. I thought he was absolutely excellent. There's no way you can drop Palmer. So
no,
you know, I most likely I think it would be unchanged with those two on the bench. And then, blimey, how much stronger? Actually, I don't think it would be unchanged. I think you could see Callum O'Dowd as start instead of Naki Wells, because if you're going to play that 4-2-3-1. Then you're better off with O'Dowd on the left-hand side because he's quicker, he's stronger, and he's left-footed. And Semenyo on the right of it, and he can join in that high press and he'd be more effective than Naki is in that. And then you've got to decide, do you play Pham up front or do you play Naki up front as the one,
which is you know, when we come on to talk about the longer term, that's obviously going to be a discussion point there. I mean, Dave, Nige, let's call him Nige. He resisted the temptation.
That's what he told me when he wrote to me this week. So,
well, I'm disgusted. I'm disgusted.
Name dropper.
Because I didn't get a letter, and I haven't asked for my money back from last season's. Anyway, I'm not going to moan about that now. They'll get a letter from me this week. That he resisted the temptation to start any of Baker, Walsh and O'Dowd, but what it made the bench look a hell of a lot stronger, didn't it? Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. He kind of had some options on there. I think I tweeted Jeff before the game that he's had a week with them. He's got some options on the bench now. I think we'll start to see what a Nigel Pearson side's all about. And hopefully today is exactly what we're going
to
see.
Shape of things to come.
Yeah, you know, it's a real positive performance. You know, I think Ian mentioned early on we were a lot more physical. We were, you know, we competed. Yeah. Those were the kind of key things for me first half. It was an easy game to play on a kind of quite a lively, bouncy pitch.
Horrible pitch, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely horrible pitch.
And I thought we got amongst them pretty well. And, you know, I thought we were getting a bit let down by the ref today. I think the ref gave them so much cheap stuff. And, you know, he seemed to be on our case all the time. And, I thought, you know, there were things where we could have got some decisions out there as well. It might have been even more comfortable. But, it's good to see a performance like that, especially away from home.
Yeah, I mean, Ian, the game.
Dave, I give you a bit of breaking news before you come to me? Sheffield United and Chris Wilder have now agreed the terms of his departure. Wilder's informed the players that he's leaving the club. Yeah.
All right. So he's out of there. I mean, let's dig into the action, because we can talk about managers and what have you after we've been through the game. I mean, early on, we started very impressively. I thought Pham Mark should have done better when he plays Wadley over when in the clear. And then Semenyo showed a taste of things to come a few minutes after that when his power, and he really has got power, he showed that again for his goal. But early doors, City had a couple of chances, but Pham should have done better with that one, Mark, don't you think? Right at the start.
Yeah, it was Harley Dean, loose header out. And I mean, he had more time, but he just blasted it high and wide. And then Semenyo came forward, played a 1-2 with Pham. And I thought he was going to shoot. But of course, because he was on the right and he went on his left foot, he actually played it to the back post, but it was early cleared. And that was a story of majority of the first half. City winning the ball in Birmingham's half and getting the ball behind the defence and just the final ball letting them down.
Yeah.
That was the problem. Of course, Birmingham had their chances.
Well, let me talk to Ian about those chances, Ian. I mean, Birmingham turned defence into attack on 8 minutes. Quick break. Bella screwed his shot across the goal, but there was Scott Hogan, a player we've been linked with many times in the past, hitting the post. And then on 33 minutes, Bella again crossed the ball. Hogan managed to get in front of Callas, and his header hit the post. You know, that was two lucky let-offs for City in a match when Dan Bentley didn't have a save worthy of the name to make, did he?
No, I mean, Birmingham didn't have an effort on target in 90 minutes. Okay, they hit the post a couple of times, but we've done that a few times this season, hit the post. And as my dad, God rest him, used to say, a miss is as good as a mile. But yeah, I mean, it's that old thing about crosses in Bristol City, isn't it? There were still, early on, too many crosses that were going in. And if we're going to concede, it will normally be from a cross. So we need to stop that. A player, I think, who may come back for the Rotherham game, not for the Blackburn one, is Baker. I think you might see him appear on the bench. But apparently he was... I had to smile when I saw a photograph of Baker taking the field for the under-23s.
Yes.
Because it looked like they'd put him in with the under-14s or something.
He looked like his dad, didn't he?
Yeah, it looked like, you know, your dad had turned up to play centre half for the junior team. You know, he probably wasn't a foot taller than the rest. He probably wasn't a foot taller than the rest of them. But boy, he did look a unit. And I don't know what QPR under 23s are. A lot of them are under 20, aren't they? But I saw him turn up and think, oh, dear me. But I'd like to see him back, particularly when you look at how the game went against Rotherham and the fact that he is a left footer.
But if we're under pressure, they could have brought him on, couldn't they, if they felt the threat of Djukovic, which was there towards the end. He could have come on, couldn't he? But I think the game was won and we carried on playing as an attacking force right up to the final whistle. Dave,
I was surprised they didn't start with Djukovic because Djukovic and Hogan. Now, the reason is Djukovic hadn't been scoring goals. He's only got 4 goals this season and everybody moans about Pham, but, you know, he's got 11. I'm surprised, since the way the game went against us at Ashton Gate, I'm surprised that he didn't start. Even if they didn't start Hogan and started him next to the other big lad that came on as a sub as well, the lad from
Cosgrove.
They would have been justified in doing that, knowing how weak we are from
the way they played, yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Let me go through the first goal with Dave. I mean, Dave, it came on 35 minutes. It was deserved. And if ever there's one player who seems to be lifted more than any by the appointment of Nigel and rejuvenated, looking like the player that featured in that loan period and has never really done much since, but he certainly has since Pearson's been on the scene. What a cracking goal that was. I mean, take us through it. I think it was Harper he robbed in midfield, but he burst forward. I mean, and a class finish, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was, yeah, yeah. You know, I think Ian's made a point earlier on about us. I'm not sure we necessarily pressed heavier because I think what we did do was we didn't let them play the ball into midfield. We didn't let them get the ball to their fullbacks. And if they did come inside, that was when we squeezed. It was like we actually went back a few years and had those press triggers and we had them all kind of working off to a tee. And they've obviously worked on that in the training ground. Yeah, Palmer stole the ball, strode forward. And then you think... I did think, oh, he might run into a bit of trouble here. He got the ball away or the shot away. And, you know, thankfully, Toby Osborne had already called it a goal before it actually hit the net on my Robins TV. So I knew it was going in. So I don't know if anyone else had that kind of like half a second.
I think it does that a lot. Yeah. Sometimes you hear the whistle before the free kick. It's a little bit weird. They're not always in sync.
But yeah, it's a great finish. I think, you know, opening 20 minutes, Palmer, there was a couple of occasions where he took some lovely balls kind of under pressure on the turn and span away from his man. And he either didn't get the pass or it wasn't quite the right pass to play. And I thought, oh, are we going to see a little bit of a frustrating game? But I think from that opening 20 minutes onwards, he was pretty efficient in everything he did. And he has a lovely goal. And, you know, he's got 4 goals and a couple of assists in a small number of games this season.
Yeah, no, good.
I think for some reason there's a delay of between 3 and 5 minutes because my missus came in and said, "Why aren't you shouting?" And I said, "Why do you mean?" She said, "Well, they're scored." And within about two minutes, Palmer had set the ball in the net. And I thought, oh, that gives me, well done, Lev, that gives me something to look forward to. It's a bit like Radio Bristol. I think they're on that delay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a longer delay than radio, isn't it? With satellite TV or Robin's TV. I mean, my sister was in front of me and said, "Oh, Palmer's just missed one at the end." I said, "Well, how did he miss that?" And I thought, "Oh God, here we go."
Yeah, got a couple of people saying a couple of minutes difference. Loudly's has said that. Red Oxo, he's over in the States. He says about 45 seconds delay. Anyway, back to the action. We went in 1-0 at half time. Thoroughly deserved, and not one of those matches where you think, phew, we fluked that. Start of the second half, Mark, I mean, Semenyo, he's looking more and more a player that will build some value over years. Powerful run following a good pass by Lansbury. I mean, he wasn't loser Lansbury today. Forced a corner, and then Callas, I think somebody said on OTIP, put in a Webster-esque type pass out of defence that Wells fumbled. But Mark, that Semenyo early on forcing a corner in the second half and Callas's pass. Do you recall those two incidents? And they were good in different ways.
He got behind Colin, and I mean, he got close to the guy, and you know, he just powers past him with his right foot on the left side. So he gets his body between Colin and the line and just powers past him. Yeah. I mean, he's got frightening pace and physicality. He just needs to improve his finishing. You know, I mean, he can score. We know he can score his ASS, but you know, it's the rest of him that we want to see scoring. Yeah. But I mean, his ability to power past players, he's really developed this season. I mean, you know, under the tutelage of Nigel Pearson, you think we could have some player for next season if he can just improve his finishing in front of goal.
Well, you wonder whether Simpson, you know, being a forward and what have you, you know, he might be giving him a little bit of extra coaching now. I don't know, but he's been a bit of a nearly man with some of his passes, but they certainly seem to come off. Ian, the goal that took us into, well, you can't say that was City, an unassailable 2-0 lead. Somebody put on an OTIP that, you know, some players get goals like that once or twice in their career. Semenyo's done it twice in the space of 4 weeks. I mean, you know, I think we dodged a bullet in signing that Pedersen there, didn't we? Talk us through that second goal, Ian, just on the hour.
Yeah, I mean, it was classic of what we did all afternoon. And by the end of it, their defenders were wetting themselves because we were actually closing them down. We weren't running towards them and letting them play it like we normally do. And I think that's, we'll come on to why aren't we that great at home. And that's one of the reasons. But it's a real press and it's a real tackle and it's real dispossession. So you saw it late on when Semenyo went after Harley Dean, and Harley Dean took the ball onto his left-hand side. Now, normally he'd have just done that and passed out to the fullback, but Semenyo was all over him like a bad rash.
Yeah,
and the same thing happened with that one with Pedersen. He's come on to him. Pedersen's obviously taken his eye off the ball a little bit, had a bad first touch on a rotten pitch. And I mean, they're not going to change that when they're 100 million quid in debt. And he's taken the ball past him. Keeper's come out, panicked. And instead of, if you like, I mean, he didn't look great ball at feet all afternoon, the keeper. It lashed it onto him and he's there and he's in the way and the ball's hit him and got in the net. I mean, it's a legitimate goal and it's what you need to do. You can't just do what we did in the first half, for example, at Swansea and say, well, here you are, lads, look, you have the ball and we'll let you pass it into midfield and play it out and get your midfield players on the half turn and pass the ball. No. Don't let them do it. Play in their half.
Yeah.
And don't let them out. And most sides, you know, even the best sides will come down to our level if we don't give them all that time. And that is absolutely key for me. That doesn't mean to say you press, but if you look at how Barnsley have improved since they play this pressing game with all the triggers, they won again today. They won late on going for it. I mean, if we'd have been 2-0 up by hook or by crook and Holden had been the manager, Taylor Moore would have been on, playing left centre back. Somebody else, and we'd have been saying, right, go on, bomb the ball in our box and see how you do.
And
we didn't do it.
That always happens. I think it depends on your state of your game, doesn't it? If you're 2-0 up and cruising like we were today, then I don't think Holden or Johnson would have brought on players like Moore. I think where we've tend to see them is where it's 1-0 and we are hanging on a bit. We've lost a grip of the game. So I think today was so comfortable. He could have done what he wanted.
Let me ask you then, Dave, about the subs, because the first one came on 74 minutes. And what you're saying, at 2-0 up, you know, you could take a gamble? Because I think what Ian was saying, Holden or Johnson, and Johnson would have bought Taylor Moore on and gone a bit defensive. But the two substitutions, O'Dowda coming on for Naki Wells, and I know it was right towards the end of the game, Watkins for Diju, but he could have made those two, he could have done all three substitutes with 15 minutes ago, didn't he? So my question to you, Dave, is how do you think Naki Wells and Pham played today? Yeah, because what next season, one will be here definitely and one might not be. So how do you view those two particular players?
Most people who've listened to me all season know my thoughts on Pham. But today, I thought Pham earned his corn today. Thought he did okay. You know, it wasn't brilliant, but he put effort and he hit some balls that were played into his feet pretty well on occasions today. And we were able to build off of it. And I think the second goal, the third goal where Palmer put Cod through was because I think Pham had got a ball into his chest, and then he flicked a pass off to Palmer, who then strode into that gap, and you know, and that was the kind of where the goal came from. So I thought Pham was perfectly decent.
He did okay. He did. What about Naki?
Well, Wells, I didn't think he had a very good game today. I thought he worked hard, you know, which is probably the bare minimum that Pearson would expect, but things didn't really come off for him today. But you know, he ran the channels. You know that there was the ball from Callas was again, you know, William running from him. But yeah, it just didn't quite happen for him around the box today. I think he probably would have liked Semenyo to have squared that ball a bit earlier for him early on in the game. Yeah. Maybe he might have got a goal from that. But not his best game today. But Pham, perfectly fine.
Mark, that third goal and what followed a couple of minutes after that, which should have been a fourth. I mean, as Dave quite rightly pointed out, it was Diju to Palmer, that slip little pass into O'Dowda. And he finished with aplomb on that occasion, didn't he? Yeah, it was a classic finish.
It was a pass by Callas. Pham shields the ball well, cushions it into Palmer's path, and he plays a left-footed ball between the two centre-backs. And Callum shifts it from left to right and slides it past Etheridge. It was a great finish. And I've seen him do that. I think he did it against Villa when Tammy played him through, and he did that against Swansea as well. I think when we beat him something like 2-0 a couple of seasons, two or three seasons ago. And he's a good finisher, and he looked very lively when he came on, as did Watkins. And the other chance, Hunt. Brilliant ball.
Well, crossfield right pass by Hunt.
Crossfield pass was terrific. To O'Dowda. And he's played the ball on a plate for Palmer. He's on the penalty spot and he just needs to hit it.
He should have whacked it, shouldn't he? I think he tried to place it.
It's like he had his slippers on, unfortunately. Keeper makes a comfortable save down to his left. But he had such a great game, Palmer. And his career was probably going nowhere for when he got recalled in January. Oh, maybe, you know, what's going on under Nigel Pearson? He looks a player transformed, and that's the.
And what a week! And what a week! And what a week for him! What a week for him! Because he and his partner, they had their second child this week. So
That's why I came up with that line. You can use it if you like.
Considering the amount of energy that he showed, you know, because usually in a week like that, some players ask for time off or offered it, but he played. He was running around like
Give birth, Dave. I think it was his wife. I think.
Yeah, I know, but the emotion. No, but the stress and the strain of being. Okay.
Somebody asked me for Dantic. Maybe he cut the cord. I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of that term that came out in the Royal Statement about a phraseology this week, wasn't it? It was interpretation of what was said or something like that. I don't know.
Go on.
10 minutes to go. I mean, it was the penultimate substitution because Watkins came on with 4 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago. But a man who everybody's been crying out for, Liam Walsh, comes on for Lansbury. And I thought he put in a couple of tidy little passes, didn't you?
Yeah, Liam Walsh is a good footballer. I've always rated him since he joined us. And he was in the side doing well, got injured at Ipswich, and we never saw him again. Then he finished up out on loan. He should have signed an extended contract before he went out there. I think he signed an extra year but we should have done something about it while he was there, because he was their player of the season and he was doing well for them. I think he's a cracking little player, and I hope he stays with us, and I hope we haven't made a mess of his contract. I can't see Pham staying, as much as I'd like him to stay, because I think in a side where he got the good service that he got today, I think he could do a decent job. And Naki, I agree with Dave. I don't think he had a very good game today, but that's because in the way we're playing, he keeps getting forced into wide areas too much.
Well, this is it.
A fox in and around the box, and that's where you want. And by the way, I thought Marley Watkins looked good when he came on as well.
Yeah, no, he's got a physical presence.
He won three kicks in a corner, didn't he? He was a menace, and that's you know, that's what you want to see. Yeah. Energy, strength.
The whole team played well, really, you know, because you couldn't look at it and say, well, he was a bit maybe. And I mean, if you look at what the midfield could look like next season, and let's assume they get Walsh on a new contract. So you've got Walsh, Williams, and a resurgent Hanoa Masengo playing, and then maybe the power of Semenyo. And then you haven't even got room there for Nash and Viner, who are in contract next season, you know, and you could try playing, and then you could have Palmer playing behind Wells and play it like that. I mean, formations, it's maybe a bit early days to talk about that, but some of the, you know, it's all coming together, isn't it? I think that's
well, there was one other thing. I mean, you've got, I mean, and Dave's been put me in my place about this plenty of times. You've been right about Palmer's all round game. Sundjic made a great run in the second half and powered into the area. Who robs him on the edge of the area? Casey Palmer, and brings the ball away. And he made tackles all over the pitch. So I used to complain a bit about the fact that he couldn't tackle. And today his pressing was great, and you know he makes tackles in key areas, and that's the great thing. Are we able to win the ball from defence and bring it out into attack? And we'll start to see the benefit from that in the rest of the season. So tip me out to you, Dave, there.
Well, well done. Well done, Dave.
I don't think it's necessarily that he can tackle or can't tackle. I think my criticism of a lot of people is that people saying Palmer's lazy. And I've never thought that. I thought he's always charged around a pitch. He's not always done it very effectively or efficiently. And until he had a run of games under his belt, I don't think he was fit enough to do that.
Well, he's got to play like that now consistently. Now, whether he can do it again on Wednesday and Saturday, but he's young, and you know we're not expecting any more players.
Well, if he doesn't, he won't be in the side. Pearson, if form dips, he won't be afraid to bring players in.
Backinson. And when I was talking about midfield, then with that little combo, that left out Backinson, Viner, and Nash. I mean, if I was Patterson out of contract, I'd be being a little bit worried now.
I'd post that on OTIB tonight, actually. Dave. Did you? Exactly that, yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? But look, Tom, I mean, look,
well, I think with Palmer, Palmer's always been able to tackle. The point is he's timed it wrong, and I think the reason he's timed it wrong is he hasn't been at 100% fit. So I described him and Wells once as an accident waiting to happen in our final third, and they were. He's now not. I still, Naki's defending, isn't, I mean, it's not what he does. So you don't buy Naki, you know, you don't buy Naki Wells for his defensive qualities. But I think with Palmer, he's got that physicality, if you want to call it that. And if he gets fit and he's right between his ears as well, then I think you've got,
We got the player we thought we were getting. Now, I'm just going to press this little button here. A little clap. Who am I giving?
Oh, thank you.
Who am I giving that clap for today? Who's getting the clap today? Not that.
Thomas Callas.
Very good, Ian. 100 appearances, Thomas Callas. I mean, he was a bit. He was given a bit of a torrid time early on, but overall, let me ask you this, Mark. Overall, captain's performance from Callas today. Him and Mariappa look not too bad together at the back, do they? Maybe Mariappa could do with being a little bit taller, but good combo at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, I think he only lost Hogan once today when he got that header in the first half. Otherwise, he was absolutely terrific. They headed everything away, staying tight to their players, and he can pass the ball. Thomas Callas can pass the ball out of defence, and that's what you want to see. You know, when players who can bring the ball out and move up the pitch. That'll be to start attacks, not just sitting behind the ball. So, yeah, he's a class player, and I mean we spent a fortune on him. So he should be good at this level.
But he should be good at this level.
He's showing now that he's the right man to wear the captain's armband. And if we can carry on this form, you've got to be excited about next season. There'll be big turnover players. I can see new fullbacks, new forwards, perhaps another addition in midfield. So,
well, I don't know about midfield when we look at it the way it is now. I mean, look, this is our 23rd game without a draw, and you know that's 9 wins. Tomo put it on the feed a little while ago, and I come to Ian and Dave, respectively, after this. Tomo said, I think Nigel hit the nail on the head this week in his pre-match presser. We've won a decent amount of games, but not drawn enough. If we'd drawn, say, 9 of our 18 defeats, we'd only be 4 points off 6th place. Pearson clearly looking at, if we can't win a game, let's get a draw. Of course, that's every manager's objective, but Nigel obviously wouldn't expect us to lose 18 from 36 had he been in charge. I mean, you know, going 23 games without a draw, Ian, I don't think that's ever happened in the 50-odd years that I've been watching the club, yeah, but it's an interesting stat. And if in that run of games that Holden lost 7 in a row, if he'd have, I don't know, won 2 of those, we'd have still been in with a shout, wouldn't we?
Yeah, we would, but you know, we always say about ifs and ands, and if your auntie had, you know what, she'd be your own.
Yeah.
So, you know, every side can say that. You know, that's why "if" is the biggest word in the world, isn't it? But no, I think you know, I mean, we've spoken enough times about you know my views on Lee Johnson and Dean Holden, poor appointments, and we're in a situation where. We need this guy that we've got now. He needs to maintain this form. So if you give him the Middlesbrough game, he's won 60% of the games, won 3 out of 5, and that's playoff form. So you need to look at it. First of all, I think what we need to look at is in 8 weeks' time, the season ends. You know, we're not in October. This is 8 weeks' time. The season ends. And those guys are going to be out of contract. So we need to have really look now and say, right, who are we going to keep? If it's possible to keep them, Pham hasn't signed the contract. So if he hasn't signed it, he ain't going to, not unless he can't find anywhere else to go. So you say, right, okay, out of those, who are we going to keep? You look at all kinds of things. I mean, I like Marley Watkins and I also like Nathan Baker, but I don't like the number of games they're fit for in any given year. So you might have to do something like.
Well, those are the flex ones. If you're looking at flex, you know, well, I'm just looking at the lineup that appeared today. I mean, Hunt had a decent. He didn't have too bad a game today. Vela was giving him the run around a bit early on, but Hunt, you could probably make an improvement there. Mendip City's said on here, you know, you'd like to keep Mariappa on a 1-year deal with a 1-year option because he's probably got a year in him. Sessegnon at left back. You know, we've got Jade Silva, we've got Tommy Rowe, yeah? So do we let Sessegnon go? Well, not do we let him go. It's not our choice, yeah? But, I mean, you know, there's lots of options there at the moment. And the key one, Dave, is if not now, when, in terms of getting Pearson signed up? Because it's starting to look like his side, as we said, with 4-2-3-1. We've got 2 home games coming up against teams that we should win against. At home.
We've heard that before.
Dear me.
Blackburn. And it's a birthday special on Wednesday night. It's Headhunter's birthday Wednesday night. So I'm still doing this. So I won't say how old I am.
You know how to live, don't you, David?
I do. But then after the Rotherham game a week today, it's 12 days.
If we play them,
if they're not still ill. But if there's 12 days before Good Friday when we play Stoke City, I think it is, yeah? So, Dave, when... You know, people are asking about season tickets, but let's assume we get 4 points and 2 home games coming up, right? You've got a 12-day gap. You've really got to get things moving looking towards next season then with season tickets and with the manager, haven't you? Yeah.
I think it will be announced in the international break. I think they'll just get this week's games over. And is it international break after that? I think
it is, yeah. Weekend, yeah, it is. 20, yeah. Whatever it is.
And unless there's, you know, something completely ridiculous goes on, you know, Ed Butts, Mark Ashton or something, you know. I think it's done. He's already started to talk like he's here next season. He's already started to say things like, we're having discussions with the out-of-contract players because we have to. We have to, you know, preparation for next season starts now. So in his mind, he's staying. And I think the only reason why it was a short-term appointment in the first place is purely because it was done so quickly. And Lansdowne's a cautious person, has probably said, let's just do it for the end of the season with a view to doing it for longer, but just let's give up each other an out, you know, it doesn't work out. So I think it'll happen in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, well, that's interesting because, again, as Ian said, hot off the press tonight, Chris Wilder's gone. Sam Allardyce probably will be. And Steve Bruce, maybe getting that late equaliser last night, kept him in a job. Newcastle, probably the only one of the other clubs at the bottom of the Prem that could go down. So Steve Bruce could be out. I think you said on the text thread on this podcast tonight, Dave, that with Pearson being a Wednesdayite, he wouldn't go and manage the Blades. But
well, Danny Wilson did.
He's actually the difference. Yeah, I think he said in the past he wouldn't manage the club, any club where he lives. So, and he's, you know, basically, yeah, he wouldn't go to Sheffield United or Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah.
So, oh,
yeah.
I can sleep more soundly now.
We're talking about breaking news, and it's nothing to do with football, but we all love him. If you love your Formula Ones, just come up on the Twitter feed that Murray Walker's passed away. So we've lost a few people this year.
97.
Bloody hell, that's old. Yeah. That gives me hope for the future then. Love to go that long.
Crikey.
Whether I'd still be doing
He didn't live to see us get in the Premier League.
I mean, look, okay, so Dave's saying what I'm thinking, that the international break. Now, if Pearson stalls them, yeah, well, how much of a risk do you think it is, Ian, that Pearson could go to West Brom or Newcastle? Are they a better proposition than us?
Well, are they a better proposition than us? Absolutely. He may not be as happy with their owners, you know, the Chinese guys that own West Brom and Mike Ashley. But if, you know, if a club like Newcastle comes in when the fans are back, they're getting thick end of 60,000 and we're getting the thick end of 25. It might not be a contest, but I think for everything I hear about it is if Bruce goes, they want Benitez back. Benitez is out of work. So, and his family still lives in this country and he's managed there before. So why wouldn't they? But I would say, if you said to me, what degree of certainty have you got that Nigel Pearson will be with City next season, I'd probably say 90%.
Yeah. Well, we hope 90%. We hope 90%.
Yeah, we're saying that, but you know, you don't know what's going to happen, Dave. I mean, we're all happy because we've had a win. It's 3-0, clean sheet, 3 points, fantastic. But if we go up to Blackburn, or the most City thing in the world to do would be to go and beat Blackburn and then lose the home games.
Is Blackburn is Blackburn up there or down?
Yeah, it's on Wednesday.
It's away up there, is it? Oh, yeah. Which is why we got Rotherham at home.
We were late.
We got Rotherham at home. We got Rotherham at home, international break, and then Stoke at home. That's right. Okay,
Good Friday Stoke, then back to St Andrews on Easter Monday to play Coventry.
I was mistaken. I'd forgotten we played Blackburn at home. Ian, you raised something with me just before we went on air. You know, we got a bogey ground and it's Ashton Gate. I mean, what's all that about then?
If you look at our record, I mean, since we've already mentioned since 2018, I think we've got the best away record in the EFL.
That's right. And 95 points now.
Yeah. At home, we haven't. And correct. The question is why? And I think a lot of it is to do with how deep we defend, how poor our midfield's been. We don't press sides. We don't play with enough energy. And I think what's happened is there's like a degree of nervousness. Now, it's nothing to do with fans because we haven't had any fans in the ground for a while. But I think our home performances have, in general, been pretty indifferent. Yeah. And we need to find a cure to that. So they should become better than our away performances. Perhaps it's something to do with formation. Look, the injuries haven't helped, but we haven't had huge injury problems since 2018. So yeah. we need to park that one a little bit. But I think since then, I don't think we've really played with any great identity. If you wanted to look at somebody said, well, what are Bristol City like? You'd show them the first four games that Nigel Pearson was involved in. And you said, yeah. That's what we're like. That's us.
Yeah.
But it's something we've obviously got to do something about it. And I think this is where, you know, a change of personnel could come in handy because the players come in and they're not saddled with that. Oh, well, of course, we never win at home, do we? Syndrome.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. What do you think, Dave? I mean, you know, the home form being abysmal, we said about it early on in the season, and even Nigel's first two games in charge were defeats. What's going to get us out of this? Is it a mindset thing, or what's going to get us out of this, unusual, you know, that the balance of points is the wrong way around, isn't it? Hello, Dave. What do you think, Mark?
I think, yeah, we won eight home games in the last two seasons, 2017-18, it was 11. So, yeah, it's abysmal. We've only won seven this season. I think we've got to take the game to the opposition. I think it is a mindset thing. We don't dictate games, and I think with the injuries, there just hasn't been any threat to players, and they've just played within their comfort zone as well.
Yeah,
I just think the mindset. I mean, we went back to that a bit against QPR last week, but I think, you know, with the week that Pearson had with them, he had a lot more time to spend with them on their confidence, and you saw that shine through today. So I think it's a confidence thing. Maybe, I mean, I talked about this on OTIB. It's a bit of a boring subject, but when he was at Leicester, he brought in a sports psychologist called Ken Way, made a real difference, stayed with them through the Ranieri time and helped them win the Premier League.
Did he?
So yeah. He really improved the mindset of the players. And Nigel Pearson is very much about man management, very good working with players.
Yeah. Yeah, and, he put an arm around Naki when he came off, and somebody said his sullen face, he made him smile, sort of thing. So
Naki was a bit daft trying to win that free kick and getting a yellow card, and he's got a little bit of a temper on him. But I'm sure someone like Pearson, it's channeling that aggression. And Wells is a great finisher. Today his touch was a little bit heavy, but he'll come back.
He will. And, well, let's wait.
Working with a manager like that, I think it'll help.
Let's move on. Here's another thing, because I think there's a big cheer going out here now for this. There we go. I watched only about 15 minutes, and I saw the games, saw the goals again today, and they got a big game tomorrow. The Bristol City, enough. The Bristol City ladies team. Dave, I mean, those goals, all three of the goals that they scored, you know, on a par, you know, with anything that we've seen the guys score, weren't they, really? Just the finishing strike, never mind some of the stuff that builds up to it. But have you caught any of the women's action?
No,
it's on Robin's TV tomorrow afternoon, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I did watch most of the game in the week. I've watched bits and pieces, mainly kind of highlights in the past, so I haven't seen a lot of it. But, yeah, you know, the goal, you know, centre back, someone with some good moves, part Palmer and Wells, maybe. It was a finish. The goal that won it, though, from Salmon, you know, a replica of Palmer's to Brownhill, wasn't it, against Charlton last season, who kind of drilled ball to the back kind of edge of the box. Great touch from Salmon. And she then struck it in with a outside of her right foot volley. Yeah, it was brilliant. There's deficiencies in the women's game in terms of some of the things they do. Some of that's down to, I think, you know, physical, you know, constraints. But I was quite impressed by their opponents. I thought they moved the ball in a pretty structured way. And I know you were just talking about Pearson and home form. And I think part of it is because we've played a different bloody system every game.
Every week.
And, yeah. You know, we actually don't know what the plan is, and therefore you get inconsistency.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll see whether Pearson's a, you know, one system man, or, you know, he might change it for the odd game. But I think I thought today we looked drilled as a team.
Yeah, no, I'd agree.
And I haven't seen that very often. So, sorry, let's just go back to the previous question.
That reminds me of something you said, Dave, in the week.
Sorry?
Do you remember that thing you put up on by Russell Martin, plan B? He said, no, we'll stick to plan A.
Yeah.
Even if we're losing, I think that's what Pearson would do. You know,
I think he will.
He believes in his own mind. Believes in his own mind. Ian, have did you watch any of the ladies' game in midweek? I thought it looked quite reasonable. The finishes, yeah. And even on Sky, they were saying what a great advertisement this game was for WSL. You know, when you consider how close towards the bottom of the league we are. I think we're one off the bottom, but it seemed to have everything, didn't it, at that level. Would you agree?
I think the game tomorrow is against Chelsea, and it's a little bit like Bristol City going up against Real Madrid, because, I mean, Chelsea are in European championships and God knows what, and whilst I'd love to see them win, because if it's Bristol City, we're playing Tiddlywinks against Kung Fu United in Dundee. I want them to win, but I'm not expecting anything more than an absolute tonking about five goals. Sorry, girls.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We might well watch it.
I'd love to see you win, but honestly, I can't.
Yeah, Tomo's commented Fevs was breaking up there, and then Fevs has come back saying it was a Sterling is chilly in the kitchen. The Wi-Fi is not as good. Yeah, we noticed that. I thought it was me for a minute, but there we go. Mark, we had Rene, the dulcet tones of Rene Gilmartin, and he added a new phrase to his repertoire today, as you pointed out to me at halftime. We've become accustomed to the final turd of the pitch when he's referring to it, but share our latest one, which comes when the ball goes out of play on the touchline.
Of course, when Birmingham brought up Roberts, they brought out the new tool that Rene Gilmartin, the long throw.
The long throw.
The long throw.
The long throw put the ball in the final turn.
Yeah, so particularly good on soil when it's fallow, I think. I'll definitely be using one of those in the garden.
Yeah. Oh, dear. All right. Mark's pointed out we should say Bristol City women, not ladies or girls. And somebody picked me up on something last week, so apologies. But there we go. Tomo's also said that's on his menu this evening. Garlic bread, I hope. There we go. Interesting. Our friend, our erstwhile manager, was on Football Focus today, and I thought he gave a very good interview to that guy. Anybody, any of you three guys see him on Football Focus? Because a big game.
I don't know. Does his head stick up above the screen?
Well, it looked like he was doing it in the back garden of his house, so I'm guessing he's renting somewhere up north. But, you know, he seems to have got the fans on his side a bit now, and they're going up there tomorrow. I note today that they played the 19-20 final of the FL Cup, and tomorrow Portsmouth lost that, by the way, to Salford City on penalties. But tomorrow Sunderland will be trying at the ninth attempt since winning in 1973 the FA Cup to get a victory at a Wembley fixture. I mean, he'll go down in folklore if he gets something out of that, if he wins it, and even if he wins the bloody double.
They're playing Tranmere tomorrow.
You know, they should do that. I mean, finally guys on the on topic, I think you've all seen there was a little piece on Twitter with Simon Jordan, who's quite an intelligent guy. You know, he says quite or talks a lot of sense. EFL Finances. I put something out on the Forever Bristol City Twitter feed as well that with Mark Ashton on the EFL board, maybe he can change that. But basically, Simon Jordan was saying that the monetization of the EFL and notably the Championship, which is the third most popular domestic football competition in the world, and I think he must be basing that in on attendances,
is
appalling, absolutely appalling. And instead of, you know, we get X percent of what the all the big clubs get, and he said it was laziness and complacency on the side of those in power at the EFL that they didn't get more for a competition that, when you look at rugby, he cited rugby, Formula One, and cricket, and a few other sports who, over the past few years, have increased their revenues by 120-odd% plus. The EFL has only increased its revenue by 33%. Dave, I come to you first. You've probably read that or heard that piece by Simon Jordan. Should they be getting more? And if the Championship did its own negotiation, it could probably get more, and then maybe some of the stuff that the bigger clubs get could end up with the little clubs, i.e. League One and League Two, getting more as a byproduct of it. Because I think Simon Jordan, he said EFL, based on certain numbers, could be worth about 2.3 billion, not about 300 million.
So Dave, that's the third best supported
domestic club. Just said that, Dave, sorry. Your thoughts?
I did watch it or listen to it on TalkSport or the video clip of it. I thought it was quite interesting. And you're right, I'd forgotten that they allow the Premier League to kind of negotiate on our behalf to some extent. And I think he's right in thinking that actually they might be able to do better. And I know there was a lot of anger, might be too big a word, but at the last TV deal that they didn't negotiate their own thing, and they also tied them in for 5 years as well. You know, who knows, in hindsight, with COVID, actually tying it in for 5 years and getting that money might not have been the worst thing. But I think what they need to do now is they need to look at it coming out of this and for when the next deal is, and work out what their strategy is and see if they can maximise it. But I don't know how realistic is 2 billion is or not, you know. But they need to try and do as much as they can.
Yeah. Ian, what were your thoughts on those? What Simon Jordan said. He talks a lot of sense on that Talk Sports show when he's on, doesn't he?
Football, the trouble is with the clubs in the Premier League is they're greedy. And they want to make it a closed shop. And if they thought they could get away with banning promotion and relegation, as they have in the Rugby Premiership this year, then they would. And I mean, I listened to Sean Dyche up at Burnley talking about, well, why should we give our money to clubs down in, you know, in the Championship? And I'm thinking, well, if you can't, in one breath talk about the overall good of the game, and then in the next breath say, yeah, we'll have increased number of European games, because the last thing, let's be honest, and in normal circumstances, the last thing we need is more football. There's far too much sport, to be perfectly honest. I mean, including cricket in that, and football and all the rest of it. But it's too much sport.
You better do your Sean Dyche. Can you do the last few sentences in Sean Dyche? Because Jeff C on here, he said Spa and Sean Dyche, that was. Ian, let's hear it again. Sean Dyche.
Why should they have the money? You know, I'm that sort of guy. I mean, I speak straight, you know. I try to bloke who lives... I charge a bloke who lives in my house rent, and I work with him because I'm mean and I'm tight and I'll smash your face in. I mean, it makes me laugh. Well, going back to Sean Dyche,
it's really good.
They talk about being a tough guy and all the rest of it. When he played for us,
he was shy.
He used to come up in the Williams stand, and he used to get absolute Darren Calder and all that. Oh, sorry, Darren, to name chat you, but they used to destroy him, call him sick. No, oh, when you're going to go back and play, what do you do today, Sean? Trip over a bus ticket? You can't play. He was never fit. He was worse than Baker. He was never fit.
And he was captain.
I think they're mean, they're selfish, and they're greedy. And until that stops, and they start thinking about it as a game, you know, 92 football league clubs or whatever it is now, it's a game and the money needs to cascade down. Okay, yeah, you get more at the top, but there shouldn't be £93 million difference in prize money for finishing top of the Championship and bottom of the Premier League.
Yeah.
If it was, if you got 40 million for finishing top of the Championship and 50 million, 55 million for finishing bottom of the Premier League, yeah, all right, fair enough, I'll go for that. Because the top clubs, as well as getting a lot more money out of the Premier League, they get a load more money out of the European games. So it, what, but what point you, do you start being, what point do you start saying, well, hang on a minute, there's such a thing called natural fairness in natural justice, and that's not just not fair and just. It's just not, it's just not fair. And until football wakes up and thinks of everything from grassroots through to Premier League as the game, then they're done. And I totally agree with Simon Jordan. I think you saw that when the guys at Rick Parry, that was head of the Football League, was going to basically sell out the EFL for £100 million loan or something.
That's
like
right.
That.
And, yeah, absolutely thank, right.
Thankfully they stopped him. There's loads of things wrong with the EFL. And they've got to get all the chairmen together and come up with something, like they made a mess of financial fair play. But the game needs it. It desperately needs it. You can't go on spending more than every penny you got. You can't go on with salaries being 120% of turnover. That's mental.
Yeah, no, that's true. Mark, your thoughts on the finances thing, Championship undervalued as a package.
The key thing for me was Jordan said that the EFL get £119 million a year from the Sky TV money, but that's only 10% of the actual revenue. So the Premier League take 90% of the revenue. So the EFL get £119 million a year, but 20 clubs compared to 72, and they're getting. They're getting a disgusting amount of money. And, you know, they talk about the football family, you know, you hear that. I mean, we're being kicked out of the football family because the Premier League couldn't give a toss. They, like Ian would say, they would like it to be a closed shop with no promotion if possible. A little bit like the rugby Premiership would like to do, and I think they've done it in rugby league as well to some extent. They would just like to keep the money in house, and they're taking staggering amounts of money. The other thing that he did say was that the EFL reckon they're going to lose £90 million if the Carabao Cup's cancelled. That's of course that's speculative, but with the with an expanded Champions League from 32 to 36 clubs, it might look like the Premier League teams might not decide to enter. So they think
they're
going to lose 90 million a year.
League clubs will do if they do their own thing, because then that would hit Sky. Yeah, and then
individual
maybe
TV
some of that
deals.
Money.
They do that abroad, don't they?
I think they do, but no, it's a complex subject, and you know, I'm sure in the post-COVID world, it's going to come into feature even more. Guys, we've done just over the hour today. It's good to have you all in as usual, and the listeners, another good audience. I'm hoping that by Easter, which is three actually before Easter, including this one, we'll pass through 20,000 listens, which, considering we only started on about the 20th of June last year, I'm really pleased with that. So thanks for everybody who's listening. We enjoy doing it. It's a bit of a laugh, and all the other podcasts are good in their own way as well. And I think everybody likes the fact that Bristol City have got four good. Let's call it half a dozen. Good podcasts out there, and you know, I think we're all pleased to be part of it, and people from the feedback.
Aren't we 32? You said to me, Dave, 32.
Well,
the
statistics.
List.
Yeah, if you look at, I signed up for something the other day, and I think we are number four, although it varies. But it shows you where the podcast is in different categories based in the UK. Now, I thought it was quite bizarre that the four Bristol City podcasts that I would say that I recognise, all four a couple of weeks ago were in the top 50 in the UK. Now, when you bear in mind you've got things like the Peter Crouch podcast and the Gary Neville podcast, and there's 20 Premier League clubs and, you know, some bigger clubs than us in this league, I question how accurate those figures were. And I'm only paying a few quid a month to get it, but I'm probably going to drop that subscription. I mean, all I know is when you land on our website or you land on the Podbean website on the front page, it shows number of episodes, and this is number 58, a number of downloads or listens, if you want to call it that. I think it was 19,053 at lunchtime today, which over 58 episodes. We had 5,000 downloads in the month of February, yeah? But that was obviously because of the change of manager and Pearson's appointment. But they actually dropped me a note and sort of said, oh, do you want to sign up for statistics? But there we go. Look, guys, I digress. We got a fantastic win today. Great performance. Everything to look forward to. 10 games to go. Could we win all 10? Don't think so, really. But guys, have a good Saturday evening, all of you. And we'll be back on my birthday, which is this coming Wednesday, when we travel up to Ewood Park to play a Blackburn side without Bradley Dack.
Dave, you ain't gonna get a present. Stop plugging your birthday. I'll get Daishi to send you something. All right.
I'm not
sending him anything. I'm mean.
Yeah. What did Gary Johnson? Right, what did Gary Johnson say about that, Ian? Because you did a good Gary Johnson in your time, didn't you?
Well,
how do you think this side compares to the one that got to the playoffs in 2008, Gaz? How do you think?
Well, I mean, obviously not as good, and Nigel Pearson's not a patch on me. I think he's all right, and anybody that says different's a spy.
Yeah, there we go. Ian, the shortest man on the podcast, but the greatest impressionist. Guys, have a great evening, and we'll see you all. Hopefully, Dave, you'll be allowed out on Wednesday as well. We'll see you all on
Somebody
Wednesday.
Somebody said Warnock next week to Ian.
Yeah, Warnock. Learn your Warnock, Ian. All right. All the best, boys.
I'll do Neil next week.
All right, you get it. All right, cheers, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Take care. Stay safe.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.